Are you interested in an MBA program located in Europe with a strong global and entrepreneurial flavor? A program that prides itself on flexibility and personalization? And would you love to complete your full-time MBA in just 16 months? Then HEC may be just the ticket for you. And today's guest is its MBA admissions director. Pull up a chair.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 565th episode of Mission Straight Talk. Thanks for tuning in. Are you ready to apply to your dream MBA programs? Are you competitive at those programs? Accepted's MBA admissions quiz can give you a quick reality check. Just go to accepted.com/MBA quiz, complete the quiz, and you'll not only get an assessment, but tips on how to improve your qualifications. Plus, it's all free. Again, use the calculator at accepted.com/MBA quiz to obtain your complimentary assessment. It gives me great pleasure to have, for the first time on Admission Straight Talk, Sarah Vanos, Executive Director, Marketing Admissions, HEC Paris MBA Programs. Sarah started her career in higher education at the University of Toronto's Rotman School of Management, and in 2014, she moved to HEC Paris, starting out in their careers office, and since 2016, she has worked in marketing and recruitment. Sarah became the Executive Director of Marketing Admissions for HEC's three MBA programs in April 2023, and she also earned her MBA at HEC in the Executive MBA program. So Sarah, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Wonderful. Now, I'd like to start with some general questions about HEC Paris and then get more specific and focus on admissions for the full-time MBA program. Can you start by just giving us a very high-level overview of HEC's three MBA programs?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we have our full-time MBA program, which is a 16-month program, which can be residential. So we have on-campus housing, or you can live off-campus. So that's in our Julian-Josas campus, which is quite close to Paris. You can do specialization, you can do electives, plus your core, plus all kinds of other sort of surprises and leadership activities. So that would be our full-time MBA. Then we have our executive MBA that can take anywhere from 15 to 21 months because it's part-time. It's either module or block, so you come on campus every 2 months, or you can do every other weekend in Paris. It's typically for more senior professionals, so the average age is 40, usually some management experience, and then we have anything from directors to CEOs to CFOs in that program, so very senior crowd. And then we have Trium, which is one of our flagship partnership programs. So it's in partnership with LSE and also NYU. Even slightly more senior profiles that join that program. And it's really exciting because it takes place in modules all over the world.
Sounds good. And how long is that program?
So usually that one is about just almost 20 months.
Okay, wonderful. Now let's zoom in on the full-time MBA programs, more notable and distinctive elements. Can you describe them? You've hinted at them a little bit. By the way, I once visited HEC Paris.
Yep.
It is gorgeous. Absolutely
yes,
beautiful.
I agree.
I don't think you'll disagree with me, but just from an outsider's perspective, and the proximity to Paris isn't bad either.
So I commute from Paris every day to go on campus. So it's actually really easy to reach. And like you said, it's beautiful. So it's a wooded, private acres of a forest, tennis courts, a chateau of its own, and of course our other programs, but the one that we'll zoom in on now is the MBA. So beautiful campus with the possibility to live on campus, which is kind of interesting and different because a lot of MBA programs, you're kind of spread out everywhere. So we feel that having this on-campus housing really builds the community from day one, because you're with about 80% of the students living in our residential housing. You can easily attend club activities, different community events. So you really foster that connection from day one. If we start with kind of the curriculum or notable things there, I think the 16 months is really unique. So typically you're looking at an MBA, where do I do it? How long? My ROI, et cetera. So we've kind of found the sweet spot. So you can either do 12 or 16 months, depending on your intake. So it can be a little shorter than the longer programs, but you get all the benefits of the longer programs. So electives, specialization, participation in our MBA Olympics, New Horizons, which is broadening your horizons and figuring out kind of how to anticipate trends. So that's unique. We have a pretty smaller than I would say some of the larger class sizes. So usually an average of about 300 students coming in two intakes, and you can start in September or January. So that's also unique. I think if we say maybe one takeaway from these things I've kind of thrown out there would be flexibility and customization. So I know that's what a lot of people look for in their program. So whether it's program length, how to sort of specialize what you take. So we have the specializations, which electives, where you live, if you live on campus, all of that really offers the flexibility to have a great experience.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Now, you mentioned the New Horizons program. What, could you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So it's a type of capstone, but it's really tailored specifically to HEC Paris. So it's relatively new in our curriculum. We always had a type of MBA project or capstone, but we've really refined this one. So when students come in, they're challenged to come up with a strategic question, but then they have followings or courses or workshops through their MBA. There's always a surprise visit. And the goal of New Horizons is A, to prepare you professionally, possibly have your question address something that will have your career sort of at heart. But it teaches you to anticipate trends and think about the what ifs. So it does that in different ways. For example, we have different improvisation workshops. So really hands-on how to react. We have workshops taught by consulting firms. So how to think like a consultant. And then we also have this kind of surprise visit. So every year the visit is changing. This year, the students were surprised at 3 a.m. to visit a place called Rungis, which is where all of the fresh food produce comes in just outside Paris. So operationally, there are so many things to look at, especially because we're receiving from countries all over the world, and just how to scale, how to anticipate, how to think about, it could be AI trends, it could be many different trends. So just addressing those in a real life place, and then speaking about them in the following workshops. And it culminates with a project or a paper where you have to take your strategic ideas, challenge it, take all these workshops, put them into place, and then your final project, which can be used towards your professional career or starting your own company.
Right. The interesting thing about the fruit and vegetable market is that it's also so old.
Yes, it's definitely. So it started in Paris a long time ago, and now it's scaled quite a bit and moved out. But it's just the most interesting place at such a scale that, you know, to think about that and managing that and anticipating trends. And what if there's, you know, a pandemic, how do you receive,
drought,
what happens next?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating idea. All right. Yeah. Now, HEC's program is a 16-month program with, as you said, two possible intakes. What about the internship? I mean, most MBA programs feel that the internship is very important, especially for career changers. What does HEC say about that?
Yeah. So HEC and myself are very, very, very happy behind the internship. It can be a very important step in someone's career. Not necessarily, but we do offer that choice. So if someone joins in September, they do the MBA internship in the traditional timing. So it would be a summer internship. So there's different ways through the curriculum to prepare. That would be sort of similar to a two-year program where you have that gap in the summer. Then you come back for your specialization and graduate early. For January, it's kind of interesting and cool because they can do a smaller summer internship, so a two-month internship in the summer, and then for their fourth term, they can choose to do a longer internship. In Paris, sometimes internships can be up to 6 months, so this allows them to do that kind of traditional French internship, and or they could go straight into full-time. So it's quite flexible there as well, shorter, longer internship, and or short internship full-time, so many combinations. I think the hardest part is kind of deciding and wrapping your head around which one is best for your career. Some of our students will choose to do other things in the summer instead of internships. Some will choose to learn French intensively. Some will choose to travel. Some will choose to work on a startup or MBA project. But I would say about 80% of students will follow some kind of internship before they graduate.
Got it. And you mentioned learning French intensively. What are the language requirements for entrance to HEC and for graduation?
So to enter, you just have to be able to pass your TOEIC, TOEFL, be a native English speaker, have done a degree prior to that in English. So the entry requirements are quite easy. I think graduating, it becomes a little bit trickier because we expect you to learn at least one new language before you leave the program and at a level designed on your goals. So we have in-person French classes, which our students can take. They can, however, choose the level based on how far they want to go. So let's say they know they want to work in France, they'll choose something a bit more intensive. So they'll evaluate their level before, and their classes will be very intense and like directed at giving a certification at a level where they can work with a proficiency. Versus other students might say, okay, I want to have a level of French to communicate, to get around Paris, to enjoy, but I don't necessarily need it to work. So they could choose that level. On top of that, we sometimes have students that will choose to follow an additional language. There's up to 14 available, some in person, some through our language center. But for example, when I worked in careers, I had quite a few students that would learn German instead of French because they were targeting to work in Germany after. So you kind of have a lot of choices there, and it's all included in the tuition, and it's kind of at the desire of the student based on where they want to go. And then we complement that with what we think can help to their professional goals or personal goals.
All right. And now, do you ever have students who, let's say, are very good at a particular language and say they want that to be their second language, so they really don't have to learn a second language, or yes, third language would be the case?
So those ones have to learn a third language.
Got
so
it.
The basic requirements is that everyone needs to come out with a minimal, I think it's a B1 level in an additional language. So we do have some students who come in speaking to most of our students. I think we looked, and I think almost 90% of our students already come in with two, so they need a third. There are students with three already who need to learn a fourth. So we just want at least one new language at a proficiency as part of the overall experience.
Got it. Now, if I recall correctly, a very high percentage of students at HEC do not come from France. Is the career placement, and if they want to go back to their home country or they want to go to a country other than France, how does that work?
Yeah, so if we looked, I just looked at this stat this morning, and I think 74% of our students work outside of their home country, but in over 50 different countries. So we do have students coming who want to work in France or Europe or UK. So that's happening. I think generally about 50% of our class has placement in Europe or the UK. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of students, though, however, who want to experience a new geography or who want to return to their company. So we have sponsored students who return to their home company, or we sometimes have students who want to go back to their home country. We also have double degree students who do 1 year here and 1 year at a university in another country. So they have those double networks. What I think is important is that we have alumni and even alumni chapters, but also sometimes alumni offices across different countries in the world. Our careers team works with companies that are global. So often they'll work with a global office who will look at regional placements. So we do have connections, I would say, worldwide. There are places where we place more students. So, you know, I would say Asia, we have more. Also, the US, last year, we had a lot of placement across Latin America, specifically Mexico, in consulting. So our careers team works globally, but sometimes they'll chase opportunities based on the makeup or desire of the class, because that seems to be ever changing. Years ago, everyone wanted to work in France. The last 2 years, I think our students have been a bit more open based on opportunity. We've had a lot of placement for consulting firms in the Middle East as well. So sometimes for MBB, students are more geographically open. So again, we have the connections and we kind of have like our plan, but then every year we make some tweaks to it with the careers team based on what our students are looking for.
Understood. Thank you. Before we turn to admissions, what don't people know about HEC Paris that you would like them to know? Are there any misconceptions you'd like to dispel, myths you'd like to bust, or just things that you think are unknown?
So I think one of the myths perhaps is that you need French, that the classes are in French, or that you need French to survive and thrive. We have lots of students every year who say it's not important to me and they have a fantastic time and you can get by. And especially where our campus is and the surrounding and in Paris, it's a nice to have French, but it's not important. So I think first off, to live in France, to even work in France, it's a nice to have. It depends on what you want to do and where you want to go, but you don't need it. And our courses outside of language classes are all in English. So I would say that's a common myth. What would I like people to know? Maybe that's You have kind of all of the things that you'd expect from an MBA, but then there's some very special things about HEC that are memorable and stand out that I would say, don't exist everywhere. So first, the specializations, that's a 4-month intensive themed kind of journey where you decide a specialization. So we can take entrepreneurship, or we could take, you know, consulting, or we could take finance. So you really do a deep dive there outside of the electives. So that's really great. We have our MBA Olympics, which I think is a standout feature as well. So we host MBAs from around the world on our campus. I think it's just a really special place, and you almost don't know it until you talk to somebody who's like working there or studied there. It's something that's not very easy to communicate in words, but I think through fit, vibe, and community, you'll feel at the moment, hopefully, that you talk to somebody who's linked to HEC.
Okay, great. Now let's turn to the application. HEC requires a GMAT or the GRE. Any plans to accept the executive assessment or other tests? Are you considering introducing test waivers?
Yeah, so I love that you asked this. It's a really timely question because I think in the last month or 2 months, we've decided to accept the executive assessment. Okay. So we could take the GRE, the GMAT, or the executive assessment. I would say, as always, it's a great idea to talk to our marketing and recruitment managers before you decide which test, because they might be able to help you find the one that, you know, is a best fit for you. We have a very low percentage recently as well of GMAT or GRE or test waivers. That would be someone with a CFA level 3, for example, someone with a really strong finance background paired with a strong English test or, you know, English university, et cetera. So it's possible, but again, it's a conversation where we look at holistically all of the elements that we would normally find in those tests. So it can happen. We have quite a bit of kind of flexibility there, but I think it's good to speak to a marketing and recruitment manager because it's really specific to the person.
Makes sense. We every so often encounter applicants who would really benefit from the test, and, you know, just the way it is. You need that information, you need that validation.
You know, sometimes it's about the time and preparation you put into the test that helps you to prepare for this big step, be ready in courses, but also sort of mentally prepare for studying again. So I think there's a lot of benefits to the tests outside of just the score to get into a program.
Good point. Thanks. Now, the website says that HEC students have an average of 6 years of full-time work experience. Qualitatively, what makes for impressive work experience in your eyes?
Yeah. So 6 years is the average. That's just taking everyone. It's really much wider because sometimes we have someone with, I would say usually 2 years would be the minimum. However, we have had once or twice someone with a little less than that. So we like to look at everyone individually. We examine, I'm in every jury. I hear about every single applicant from what they wrote in their essays to, you know, all of the things that we look at. So we do look at everything. Strong work experience is typically someone who has done something impressive or has shown a promotion or has a good motivation that matches kind of what's happening in their careers. So we'll look at the CV, we'll look at the roles that the person has had, we'll also look at their motivations alongside of that, then we'll look at their essays to understand a little bit more deeply, possibly their projects. A clear CV is always nice because sometimes when there's many points and there's mumble jumble or like a really crazy format, it's harder for us to really assess the CV. But I would say usually career progression, interesting projects, promotions, sometimes brands can be interesting as well, but they're not necessary. A really cool startup project can jump out. We're looking for a diversity of professional backgrounds as well. So sometimes, you know, we might have a pile of amazing investment banking CVs, but then we'll have a designer or an architect and that will really stand out to us. So we're looking at everything. So not just what you think would be like a perfect CV. We're looking for adding that professional diversity to the classroom and things that will really be interesting or that are interesting to employers. So if we talk about designers, it's so interesting because in the last couple intakes, we've had some really kind of cool or atypical profiles, and they're the profiles that the companies that we're recruiting were really looking at. So I would just say people don't count yourselves out because you have sometimes no idea what will jump out in the MBA world or what will be a success.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Now, you mentioned a minute ago the MBA tournament, right? Which is one of HEC's, I think, better known programs. And it's a 3-day multi-sport competition. There have been 1,500 participants from 15 leading international business schools participating. I'm sure it's an organizational challenge for the students, but it and HEC's essay questions lead me to ask about the importance of non-professional avocational interests in or activities in your admissions process. Is that something that you look for?
Yeah, so we definitely assess extracurriculars. We also assess there's a section where you can put any additional information. It's important to us that people learn both in kind of traditional ways and atraditional ways. So when you're taking an MBA, we're looking for you to learn in the classroom, but outside the classroom, that can be through clubs, social activities, conversations. Sometimes we even look also at it can be travel or things that show that you've kind of opened your mind. So it doesn't necessarily, not everyone would have had the chance to study or work abroad or travel, but it could be something as simple as extracurricular that's global, or it could be working with business colleagues across countries. So we do look at that. We have a section where you're able to share. Again, you can be creative in some ways there. We don't need you just to have volunteered, you know, at a food bank. That can be fantastic. But if you volunteered in other ways, if you've made like a committee at your work, if you have, again, started a company, if you have some kind of social purpose, or, you know, you're involved in something within your community, I think any of those are good to share. Probably the more the merrier. Because some people, I think they undervalue what they do. And then we see the line on their CV that says they're like, I don't know, a martial arts champion, but they didn't add that into their actual application or a dance champion or somebody who's a guitarist on YouTube. I don't know. We see all kinds of interesting things. And sometimes we find that in the line in the CV, not in the application.
Right. So include that stuff. Yeah. The website says that HEC students had an average GMAT of 690, and I think 93% of his students are from outside France. Now, you can't accept all the people who apply. You don't, you know, there's no 100% acceptance rate at a program like HEC. What do you look for besides stats? Now, you've mentioned a little bit. Maybe you can just give a little more on that.
Yeah, so typically we will assess everyone. So we'll start by looking at their CV. So that's one of the criteria. We'll look at the GMAT GRE test. These are things that kind of all follow and complement each other. We look at previous academic backgrounds. So which school did you go to? What did you study? And again, we try to tie all of this back to the motivation. So there's a motivational paragraph where you get to explain what's next, why an MBA. So we're kind of trying to look holistically. As discussed, we looked at extracurriculars. We also look at languages. So we think it can be interesting, even if you've just started to learn a language, if your goal is to work in France, it can be helpful if you've already started learning. It's not necessarily, but we do look at that in terms of, again, motivation, career desires, and outcomes. We look at the essays. So we read all of the essays and then discuss them. So sometimes things can jump out. Some of them are kind of creative. So I would say in there, depending on the essay topic, we're looking for different things. The additional essay is something that not maybe only 10 to 20% of students use, but it's extremely interesting because it's where you can add anything that we might not have known about you. And it's often where we learn something extremely interesting. So I would say that's something to look at. Where we also evaluate, but it's at a later state, would be the interviews. So how did it go with your alumni interviewer? How did the alumni interviewer rate your presentation? Because you have to make a presentation, the communication skills, the motivation, etc. I think those are all of the main buckets if I'm thinking through them. There's none that's weighted super heavily. They're all kind of pairing together and matching together. And even if someone didn't have the perfect application, because we discuss each and every profile in a jury of several members, there are other things that can come into play. So for example, our marketing or recruitment managers try to have a call or meet everyone that comes in the program. So it can be very interesting because often they'll add complimentary information that can boost almost if somebody forgot something and the marketing recruitment manager knows, they can also, you know, talk about their conversation, talk about things like that. So I think that's also somewhere that can kind of add value.
So is there a conversation in addition to the interview, or are they synonymous, are they one and the same?
So the process is basically we evaluate the whole application. The marketing recruitment manager presents the file. We speak, we all go there. Then we decide who moves to interviews. So from there, that stage, then they have two alumni interviews, and that's where we leave the decision to our alumni. So that's a bit almost scary because in my teams, we could say, this is the perfect CV. This is the perfect profile. Unfortunately, if they don't make it with the two favorable comments from the interviewers, they can't be admitted. So if both say no, we are like, oh no. That has happened. And it's always unfortunate because if we move someone to interviews, we really believe in them, but we believe more in our graduates' opinions of who will fit best at HEC and who will make HEC shine the most. So we kind of send them off and let them have that final decision.
What if the interviewers don't agree?
So if there's two that don't agree, which happens not as rare, it's more rare than you would think. Yeah. If they don't agree, however, then it comes back. So we have a final jury, which involves people from our academic and delivery team, the dean, the careers team, myself. It's quite a large team. So that's where we vet them all. If they're all, you know, had a great application, they made it to interviews, it's good. So we still check in case there's any flags that the larger community would like to discuss. That's where we debate as a group. We read the comments. We look at the assessments of both interviewers, and we try to understand what the interviewer said, what that means, how does that tie back. So it's kind of a final check and balance. And then the members of the final jury get to vote.
Wow. That's quite a process. Now we've touched a little bit on the essays, and there's five required essays and one optional. And they cover a broad array of topics that there is definitely a creative element to them. What do you want to learn from these essays?
So I've been thinking about that a lot because we've been getting a lot of questions about AI and ChatGPT and what we look for. And
I'm going to ask about that too.
Yeah. Okay, no problem. What we're looking for there depends on the question. So sometimes we're looking at maybe like a ethical dilemma or something that someone's facing in their work. We're looking for a genuine example. It's not necessarily like, are you writing a poem? Are you a great writer? It's more about the content of the essay and what's there. And is it genuine? Is there something interesting? Do they assess themselves? Do they have emotional intelligence? It's hard to read all of this from an essay, but actually you can get a lot more, I think, in these paragraphs than you would imagine based on the differences of the questions. It can be, I don't know, sometimes you can see that someone is a little bit creative when they describe where they might take you in their home city. You can see how they kind of struggled with the decision or how they turned it around. So we're just trying to get to know the person, because until that point, we may or may not have met them. We want to get to know them over paper. So it's not something that you can just say like, yes, no, it's a lot deeper than that, I think. So the more someone would share, I think the more we would be able to assess and get to know them and hopefully move them to the next round.
Sure. I also found it very interesting that the longest essay question, the highest word limit, if you will, is the optional. The required questions are like 250, 200 words, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're quite short. Concision is valued.
Yes. Yeah. I think we're looking for, you know, usually it's a couple of paragraphs, sometimes a little longer depending on the person. Definitely a word limit can be important, because we have had, I think our longest CV was 24 pages once. Oh, so it was a researcher citing a lot of research.
For
us, that was just a little bit too long. So we want to make sure that we find that sweet spot. Additional can go a lot longer because it's sometimes people use that to articulate various things for scholarships. So they might want to put additional information if they're looking for a scholarship that we couldn't have measured. Some people are telling us more about their life situation. So yeah, for the additional, we let it go. We haven't had anything too long yet. And like I said, not that many people use it, but it's always quite valuable when they do. Some people will use it to explain a GMAT score if it's maybe lower than they would have hoped. Other people will use it. For example, we have our Laidlaw scholarships. So that's 100% funded tuition. So some of our female students will use that as a place to kind of indicate that they're interested, and there they would have to express financial need and a little bit more information. So we kind of use that for everything for now. We're changing to a new CRM relatively soon, wherein we'll be able to break that down a bit more based on yes or no. So it'll become more sophisticated shortly.
Okay. All right. What's the most common mistake that you see applicants making in the application process?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Usually we kind of let it go because it's so common, but a lot of people will cut and paste essays and keep the other schools that they're applying to. It's okay because we know that they're applying to multiple schools, but sometimes people will say, I'm applying to HEC only, and then they will cut and paste an essay and a CV where they cite another school. It's the most common one. I think for the admissions team, we are rather used to it. We know that it can happen. We know, okay, it's an oversight. Maybe the person is not super detail oriented, but where it can have a larger impact is our alumni will have access to the application of the person who's applied and moved into an interview round. So for, I would say, our alumni, it's a more big mistake because they want people who are like diehard HEC. They want them to love HEC, to only be thinking about HEC. So common, easy though, I think, for applicants to take a quick double check, you know, put a PDF of your application file, look the whole thing through, and just look for these very small but easy to fix things, I would say.
Yeah, this is one of the things that comes up repeatedly from admissions directors. My suggestion for applicants is, if you are adapting essays from another school, not to make, don't cut and paste, number one. But if you are adapting essays from another school, when you start that process, not at the end, when you start, do a find and replace. Okay. That way you will not miss it. Just do it at the beginning. Okay. Do it then. And it's taken care of. You won't be making the mistake that Sarah just mentioned. You mentioned ChatGPT a few minutes ago. Are you concerned at all about it?
So what's quite interesting is, recently we had a professor who gave an exam and he allowed half the class to use ChatGPT and he allowed half the class not to use it. And it turned out no one knew who did, who didn't. And the professor, when they were marking the test, they didn't know who had used it or who didn't. The grading was much, much higher for those who did not use it. So I think that says something for now. Who knows in the future? I think that you may lose creativity, and sometimes we know people did ChatGPT because, like, the format of the paragraphs or how they use emojis or kind of how they do things, it's quite easy to know. In the end, we are not going to ding anyone for it, but I think you might be doing yourself a disservice because, A, you miss the thought that you put into the essays, which is just as important as what you write. I think the process, taking the time, finding your achievement, wording it, you know, having that deep impact to how it comes across and how we'll read it might or might not be more generic. I don't know yet, and I'm sure ChatGPT will get better. But for the moment, I don't think it helps candidates that much, maybe to formulate their ideas. But then I would still go back. And if you want the best essay, I think probably for now, you're still better than the robots. But we're not too worried for the moment. We'll kind of see what happens in the future. But again, we're not looking at somebody who writes perfectly. We're looking to understand the person, their ideas, their flow, et cetera. So if they have someone or a robot that helps them, it's not the end of the world today.
Okay, got it. What about those applicants applying for your January 2025 intake, which is already open, or planning ahead for the September 2025 intake? So they're in the planning stages. Okay. They're not, you know, in knee deep in essays and the boxes and all that stuff. What advice do you have for these two groups?
Yeah. So I think they kind of have like a pleasure and a joy of planning, because we see both the people who plan really early, especially when we go to fairs, for example, in Germany, they're planning 2 years out. And then we see last minute applicants who are coming in 1 month. We like all of them, but I do think that there's a joy in planning early because it allows you to kind of check the boxes, make a financial plan, figure out the funding, how, you know, you're going to be able to pay for this, make a really good Excel, because I think the funding and understanding that is quite important. And sometimes it can be maybe overlooked or rushed. So I think it's great because you can actually make, like, I want to save X, and you know how much your loan is for. I think the other thing is that you have more time to perhaps visit schools, explore, you know, maybe do that thing where you go on multiple campus visits across schools to assess fit, more time to get in touch with current students or alumni or the schools themselves. What I would probably look at for those candidates too, schools are changing their curriculums, not rapidly, but I hope that they're adapting every couple of years. So I guess it will be important to know, how do schools adapt their curriculum? How might that impact you? How can you kind of anticipate what might be different in a couple of years? So those are some questions that could be interesting to ask. But otherwise, I would say just enjoy the ride, the joy, all of the time you have to study, to plan, but don't under or overestimate the amount of time and kind of ignore little things. Just use that time wisely so that you have, I guess, a pleasant journey where you can plan everything and you're not rushed at the last moment.
Sounds good. Great advice. What would you have liked me to ask you?
What? Yes, this was the one that I've been trying to think of. Maybe why or how is an MBA still relevant? Is it still relevant? Why is this the degree to follow maybe in today's day and age? I think that's something that people are kind of questioning.
Right. Why get an MBA to begin with? How is it valuable? I mean, you must have gotten yours fairly recently.
Yep. So I think, since the moment that I worked at Ramen, I have, and even before, real admiration for the MBA degree, because I think it's so versatile. And having had the pleasure of working in careers, I've seen miraculous career jumps, changes, and not just career, but also personal. So if I look at a student who would come for coaching in year one versus two, the way that they're challenged, the way that they're trained to feel comfortable in the uncomfortable, the way that MBA programs teach a core, but also teach you to anticipate trends, the way that you can holistically see marketing or finance or all of these buckets and how they work together, I think it's incredible. For me, it's still like the most transformational, versatile degree. It opens doors that would most likely be closed or take you a lot longer to achieve. So I think that that's probably the thing that you should know first. Like, why are you passionate about an MBA? And then for me, I truly believe in this degree before I did it, but since I did it, and with everything I've seen from careers to admissions and more.
Right. Makes sense. I also, you know, I got my MBA, but a long time ago, and I did not pursue what at the time was a very traditional MBA path. It still is a traditional MBA path, but it was less common to pursue the non-traditional path at the time. And I don't think I fully realized the benefit of the degree until maybe 15 years after I got it, but it still benefited me, which was when I started to accept it. So, you know, it's not just that first job. It has long-term value.
Yep. That's extremely important. You're not just investing in something that's for a couple of years. You're investing for something at life. And I'm sure that there will be moments at 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 beyond, where you'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that. Or, oh, I can read that balance sheet, even though you haven't used it. Or, you know,
right. I mean, I don't remember how to calculate a put or, you know, any of that stuff, the formulas, but the concepts, I think, you know, not all of them, but I still, you know, those have been very, very valuable. So anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about HEC Paris's MBA programs?
Yeah, so I think the first stop is probably the most obvious. So go on the HEC Paris MBA website. From there, there's two kind of buttons that you can click that might be a good place to start outside of the curriculum, et cetera. One would be to connect with us. So I mentioned our marketing recruitment managers. They're the loveliest people. They want to get to know you, and they're really genuinely there to help you get to know you. When I visit their offices, they know where someone they met 2 years ago is in the class or in which job. So it's genuine. Or we have a button that talks about kind of our news stories or blogs, and it inspires me all the time. I also really like the Instagram, but I won't go too crazy because I like to dream about what's next beyond just kind of the technical things in the brochure. And our stories allow you to dream about, I don't know, a family that moved here together, or at Christmas, there was all the Christmas lights of Paris and what you can enjoy, or a student story about where they did their internships. So I would say start by dreaming and connecting with us, and then go deeper into the details.
Sounds good. Okay, now we're going to include links in the show notes at accept.com/565 to HEC Paris's MBA programs, as well as to related articles and interviews. They are all linked to from accept.com/565. A lot of prepositions in that previous sentence. In any case, quick reminder, don't miss the MBA admissions quiz. Find out if you're really ready to apply and competitive at your target schools. Take the quiz at accepted.com/MBA quiz. Listener, thank you too for joining Sarah Vanos and me for our 565th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. You'll find subscribe links at accepted.com/565. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.